Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to hour number three of the most thrilling 3 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show. My very special guest is Ole. And I think that's you know, have you ever thought about becoming some kind of like a conspiracy bullfighter or something like that? You know, like dress up David Rockefeller or something like that with little devil's horns and like get him to charge at you blindly, you know, like, I don't know, hold a child's skin or something like that to really, really antagonize him. Wait, that was really dark. I'm sorry.
That's really gross.
It'd be really nice, though, if he's like charging at you and then you get to stab him with a little knife, you know. All right. Just, you know, I don't know. Bullfighting, conspiracy fighting. Ole! I just had to make a lame joke. I couldn't resist. Okay, well, anyway, we've gone through the methodologies of how assassinations are pulled off and gotten away with and how terrorism is pulled off and gotten away with. And we've gone through what happens to a person who discovers this kind of phenomenon and the emotional trauma, sociological differences and things of that nature that really happen to you. Now, I want to quickly give a plug to your website. It's lightonconspiracies.com or lightonconspiracy.com?
Lightonconspiracies.com, because there's quite a few of them.
How long have you been running that website for?
That's about a year and a half.
Okay. And you've been studying conspiracies for, what did you say, like 3 decades plus?
Yeah.
Okay. And JFK was your first one you've gotten onto. What about other ones? Like, in my opinion, it's kind of like a spider web nexus. So, like, almost every conspiracy kind of, in some way, shape, or form, you know, loosely ties into all the others because it's a similar group of conspirators that that post them all off. I wonder what your view on, say, for example, chemtrails is.
I would say at the moment we're being attacked from so many different directions, but from the same group. If you track them back, if you're going back, or higher and higher, higher up in the power pyramid, you end up with the same people all the time. So I would say all these so-called terror acts, chemtrails, GMOs, vaccines, you name it, same people.
Mm. Yeah, I'd tend to agree with you on that one there. And this is actually one of the things that I find very interesting about the conspiracy culture as it's starting to evolve, is that you have groups that want to deny certain conspiracies' existence, connections, and what have you, and only focus on certain ones. One of these groups is the, I call them the It's the Jews group, you know? No matter what conspiracy it is, it doesn't matter if a water pipe breaks in Damascus or a princess dies in a tunnel. It's the Jews. And it seems to me that people want to oversimplify things. They don't want to actually admit that they don't know everything and kind of go into the complicated situations, connections, and what have you, and just for the sake of accuracy. And in so doing, they oversimplify and they say, oh, there's only one solution. And many people in the free man on the land sovereignty movement are also touting this line. There's OPPT and so on and so forth, who say there's only one solution and it's this. There's only one solution and it's that. In fact, I had one of these people from Canada come into my home just the other day, and she's hoping to take the Prime Minister of Canada, Stephen Harper, to court over the chemtrails issue. She's been trained as a legal secretary and all of these kind of things. She goes, oh, there's only one solution, I'm going to do this. And I said to her, how can there only be one solution? Let me ask you a question. How many ways is the New World Order currently attacking us? And she goes, well, every conceivable way possible. And I go, well, in that case, every single thing that you do against their agenda is part of the solution. Wouldn't you agree that there's not only one?
Are you asking me that?
Yeah.
Okay, I thought you were asking her that. No, I totally agree. It's very, very easy to go into the oversimplifying thing. At the same time, I would say, in my humble opinion, everything that I've been looked into, not all of them, but a lot of them, goes back to the same group, the same group. And but it's also like with the chemtrails and so on, you have to come to a very, very high level to be able to pull this thing off. Where do they, why are these planes not shut down? You know, they go over, then they're not registered flights, they're not planes, normal planes, most of them.
They have their transponders turned off, yeah.
Transponders are turned off. Why are they not shut down? I mean, why are there not fighter planes up there forcing them down or shooting them down? The answer is they have got approval from a very high level. So why are they not being approached by the government? Why are they not doing something? Because for some reason, it's coming. The clearance is coming from a higher level, and this is the way you go up in the power pyramid to see that the only ones that can pull this off is on that top level, and that's where the different strings meet from whatever you look into, or many of these different things you look into. It's only by having the clearance from that level that you can will be able to pull it off.
Now, the most horrifying conspiracy that I've found is the network of pedophiles that run around the world. This is probably the... This is the graduate course, ladies and gentlemen. If you go in, if you get to the point in your conspiracy study where you actually become aware of the global pedophile ring, that's probably about the most traumatic field of study you'll ever encounter. I haven't actually come across anything worse than the wholesale murder and rape of children. And because it's the most traumatic, which this is my opinion, of course, it is also the least, shall we say, palatable conspiracy for anybody to find out about. I was having a conversation with some of the protest march leaders, and in fact, over the break, I was editing a bit of that protest footage. And some of these guys know about, shall we say, local government corruption and things of that nature, media manipulation. They're starting to get into it. And then we started having a conversation over a beer about this global pedophile ring. And they were just kind of like, I don't want to believe that or anything like that. And one of the other guys at the table knew about this. It seemed that he knew just as much, if not more, than I did. And he kept trying to talk to these people about it, okay? And I could see them withdrawing, and I actually had to pull him aside, and I say, dude, they're not ready for this, okay? If you keep talking about it, they're going to shut off and ostracize you as a result. Even though you've helped them in this protest, even though you've they trust you and everything like that, they're not ready for this one, not yet. You need some kind of... you need some kind of slope to take you up there, sort of gently in a way, in order to make it even acceptable that there is a global pedophile network that uses child protective services, or in the New Zealand equivalent, child, youth and family services. Basically, as I mentioned earlier, the lines of officialdom, whatever they say they're doing, it's probably the opposite. Well, if a government organization is there and it says it's there to protect the children, it's there to kidnap them and supply them to pedophiles, to a degree.
I can only say this is an area I try to avoid speaking about, just because, just like you say, because most people just shut down. Because what you describe is absolutely horrendous and absolutely awful, awful. Mm-hmm. What I found, however, is that when you start really... going into great detail and discovering what these groups are about, these pedophile rings pop up again and again, and the connections, and also the how they are not being looked into, but instead have got like a cover from the top. They're sort of like untouchables. Once again, we go back to the same thing. Who can support that? You know, who are the ones that will give them the possibility to pull this off without being exposed? And we come back to the same power elite again. I also feel that when you look into many of these conspiracies and the people behind them, It's like they worship the male energy, the brutal, muscular, destructive male energy, and they're totally against the female energy. And quite a lot of these people seem to be involved in sexual acts that is not considered normal, like with children, also a lot of homosexuality. I'm not saying anything about the gay movement. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about being against the female energy that I don't understand this type of mentality at all, but that is what pops up again from everything from down on the street level when it comes to these mercenaries and serial killers and professional killers. There's a lot of gay activity going on. And also when you get up in the ranks, then it's when the pedophile thing gets more and more involved. So I don't understand it, but yes, it pops up again and again, and it seems very connected together, I would say.
Now, in order to maintain connections of this magnitude, one word comes to mind: blackmail. Anybody wants to stand out, say, "Hey, well, I really don't agree with this." Well, bro, we do have video of you molesting several children and whatnot. Are you sure you want to go through with this so that we can release it to the public with our massive propaganda media machine? Okay, maybe I won't. Maybe.
This is, I think, very what you're saying, because Uber fine-tuned the system of how to collect a lot of evidence to shut people down. You know, if anyone started to point fingers or something, he would have material that would just to incriminate them so much that they would just shut up or stop whatever they were doing. And I think when you look on different countries, there's a very similar activity going on where the so-called security forces or what do you call them, secret services and so on, they collect information, they arrange the different types of a lot of these so-called inside parties, you know, where they're actually sex parties with prostitutes, children, homosexual activities and so on. But what these people are not aware of that are invited to this, they feel, wow, I'm just part of the elite. They feel, but what we're aware of is that it's being filmed and documented, and so that it will, at any time that they would say anything at all, it would be used against them, just like you say. And this also goes with the Freemasonry rituals that people are invited in. And they don't. They think it's just a nice brotherhood that, great, we will help each other with business and take care of each other and so on. But in these rituals that they go through, they're not aware of that these are recorded and being used, or possible blackmail, tools against themselves.
Even the Queen, I think, retains certain powers. Like, for example, over the New Zealand government, she retains power over State Intelligence Services here, SIS. And I believe one of their charges is to investigate and gather dossiers on all politicians. So if any of those politicians start passing legislation that goes against the Queen's agenda of basically owning the country as a corporation and so on and so forth, you know, take your pick. Yeah, they can basically just destroy your reputation and you'll never work in the business again. And that's actually quite a credible threat, because if you spent your entire life trying to remain squeaky clean and there's only one tiny little thing and that the intelligence service has got and you don't know that they got it, all they got to do is just say, "Hey, we actually do have this. Shut up, boy. Shut up." And you do, don't you? Unless, of course, you want your family to be dragged through the mud. That's another part of it as well, threatening people's families. And you mentioned the Romans. The Romans had a saying, I think it was like, if you want to control the men, control the women. And if you want to control the women, threaten the children.
Yeah, I would say once again, you're very spot on. And there's a lot of like standard procedure, you know, how to control people. And also when you get up in the ranks within politics and other of these major corporations and so on, the only way to go get up there is through showing your loyalty to the cause. And in that case, in this case, the cause is sort of like the dark force. So you have to go through this, show your loyalty, and then that's the way to get get up there. But the more, the higher up you get, the deeper the shark waters you get into as well. So I for one, do not envy these people that are in there, because they're sort of like in a loop that they cannot get out of without destroying themselves.
It reminds me of the story of Donnie Brasco.
Yeah.
So deep in with the mob that you don't even know who you are anymore.
Standard procedure again. You lose yourself. They really symbolically sell their souls to the devil, as they say. And once you're in there, how can you get out?
Now, this also occurs to me as something Ian Wishart is exposing in his new book, Totalitaria, about the satanic agenda. Now, there is, the UN's supposed to be a secular organization, right? Allegedly. However, they do have a room in the United Nations building called the Meditation Room. And in that room, there's like a pyramid or something of that nature, or some satanic sigil for which the measurements or something of that nature add up to 666 or something of this nature. Many people have talked about the satanic agenda. And I don't know if you've noticed this, but I certainly have. The discriminated groups of people have changed over time. It used to be discriminated against blacks, discriminated against gays, discriminated against communists. Now it's discriminated against conspiracy theorists, discriminated against smokers, and discriminate against Christians. Have you noticed this too?
Yeah, it's different trends. It's exactly.
I mean, if you're a smoker, a conspiracy theorist, or a Christian, you're just basically like a leper, you know? You just get cast out. You know?
Sounds a bit like you here, doesn't it?
Yeah.
You take at least some of the boxes.
Yeah. And it's actually part of the reason why I'm actually quite proud of to be one of the most discriminated against groups of people on the earth. You know, it's like, justification for what I do.
But when it comes to these satanic things, once again, this is an area that I leave to other people. I try to stay away from that because also, like you say, people shut down when you start talking about these things. And so I prefer to deliver the information that I have uncovered, which is more like on a street level, how things were carried out and who did it and so on. But one of the things that keeps repeating itself is the dates. They're very much into
numerology.
The rituals, the symbolism. You know, very often when they've done a hit, an assassination or something like that, within a year there's an obelisk erected there, like within 50 meters or 100 meters somewhere there for the decoration of the park or whatever. But it's almost like a business card or a secret language they have for their own members, just saying, here's another one we pulled off, and like giving the rest of us the finger almost. And also sometimes the place where the hit is done, the person is killed, is very often on some kind of ritualistic spot. You know, you got like, if you look from Google Map, you will see that the streets go into a perfect pyramid and the killing is done right at the top of the pyramid. Or you can have the park next to where he was hit, the decoration. If you look from above, you will see that the fountain is shaped like an all-seeing eye, and the lawns are done like in a triangular perfect pyramid shape once again. Or you got the eternal flame, like where they killed Diana, or like this symbolism is there. It keeps repeating itself, so they put a lot of effort into it. I'm not one that understands why they do this, and why also sometimes the place that somebody is killed on used to be like the place they chopped the head of people, you know, in the old days, or something like that. It's, once again, I don't know what they're up to. I can just say that it's a very clear pattern.
Well, I came up with a phrase. It's called dark occulted mysticism.
There you go. Yeah.
Yeah.
But like I say, I'm not an expert, so I don't go into these areas.
Oh, yeah. I mean, well, you know, if you can't comment because you don't know, just don't comment. You know, that's basically how it goes. I heard a rumor that the spires, the obelisks, are a way of kind of like channeling Luciferian energy from the sky down into the earth, kind of thing. Now, I'm not sure exactly how well that plays out. However, I do know that almost every single city and town in New Zealand, just New Zealand alone, has some kind of Masonic spire in the middle of it. Even Auckland City has a giant tower called the Sky Tower, which is the tallest building in the Southern Hemisphere, and it looks like an enormous syringe. Or something phallic. And that's basically another thing, is the phallic symbolism everywhere. And we've got this park. I remember having a conversation with some people who were like, yeah, you know, the kind of people we were talking about, the ones that shut down sort of thing. I was talking about the number 33 and how there's 33 bones in the spine, including the cranium, you know, the 33rd, the skull, you know, symbolizing enlightenment. And I tried to give examples of other things that come with the 33, but I couldn't come up with any at the time. And then the person next to me said, well, actually, there's a park in Auckland called One Tree Hill that is owned by Freemasons New Zealand, and it's exactly 33 hectares. And there's a spire on the very top of the hill that is exactly 33 meters above sea level. Love those numbers.
This keeps repeating, so I wouldn't underestimate the importance of it. I don't know why they do these things, but it's very, very repetitive. This the exact measurements, the exact the numbers, the dates, even when they take someone out in a hotel room, very often the number of the room or the floor or whatever they place them. Very symbolically, or the number plates of the car that they use to hit and run, or whatever it is. I mean, there's one, I don't know if you heard about that, it was the so-called Queen's Day in Holland, 2009.
Queen Beatrix of the Netherlands Day?
Yeah. But that even though she's, it was her father who was part of starting the Bilderberg Group, and she's very much involved in all of these things. But the if you look at exactly where was the hit was done, it was there was this the Queen's Day that was to celebrate the Queen, and they were coming the streets. Of Apeldoorn, I think it's called that, Appeldorf or Apeldoorn, were filled with crowds of people, you know, cheering and so on. And the Queen and her family was in a like a double decker bus, open one, and it was driving towards actually the Bilderberg Hotel. And right in the middle of this thing, when the bus turns a corner, there's a car that just plows through the crowd, a black car, and it just misses the bus, but instead goes in and crashes right in through a monument. This monument is a massive big obelisk. And when you see the whole filming, how they filmed it, the event, it starts with a TV camera while the bus is approaching. It films up and down this big obelisk. Now, really, when you look at it, it's so, so symbolic. Up and down, and then here comes the bus with the Queen, and suddenly out of nowhere comes this car and crashes right into the obelisk, killing apparently four people. These people, as far as I know, have never been identified. It seems like it's one big false flag operation again, because there's, once you start getting into and really look into the details, so many things doesn't make sense at all. It sounds like a super false flag again. But if you look at the point where this whole thing happened, if you look through Google Map, there's a perfect pyramid, and it's at the exact top where the obelisk is situated and where the hit is done.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, we'll just take a moment for you there. I also wanted to put in something. It's kind of like an inside joke, you know, like if you know the punchline and what have you. You find it funny, but nobody else is even aware that there's a joke at all. And I liken this truth or drinking games. I've created one truth or drinking game. It's the David Icke drinking game. If you watch a David Icke conference or something of that nature, every time he says the word decode, reality, or you take a drink, you know, and you'll find out that you get really, really drunk, and you're actually having quite a laugh at how many times he says these words. Or if you can play the Alex Jones drinking game, every time he says it's admitted, every time he says I have the documents, then you take a drink, you know. It's just like an inside joke, whereas somebody who's not familiar with Icke or Jones wouldn't know why you were drinking and wouldn't know why you were laughing. And I think that's half of the methodology by which the New World Order operate, is that they have these little inside jokes that they love and they find funny. And there's another thing: they find human suffering amusing, entertaining, and they love it. They feed off of it.
Once again, I don't understand what they're up to. I don't understand the mentality, but it is just like you say, it is like they're thriving on these low energies, like fear and despair and depression and all of the low emotions. That is what they really feed off. That is my impression.
Well, I can actually elucidate a little bit here for you then. If you ever have a conversation with Thomas Sheridan or Jay Widener and other people who have immense study on the mentality and motivations of psychopaths, what they've determined is that psychopathy is actually a mind parasite that feeds off psionic energy to a degree. I mean, for lack of a better word. And it is indeed a form of food for them. And without these low frequency energies, the organism starves to death. If you were to put one of these psychopathic individuals on an island with nobody to victimize, no pain, no fear, no rage, nothing like that around them, apparently they die. It doesn't matter how much food or water they've got. This is what these researchers have been telling me. So there's an element for you, which I found very intensely interesting. Oh, and also, here's another thing. They're infectious. If you actually hang around these people for too long, you can become one of them.
What can I say? I can only observe and say that if you come from that angle, things starts making sense.
Mm-hmm. Now, alternatively, of course, we're thinking about the mentality, the lusts, and the desires of the elite. Everybody talks about the end game. What are they really moving towards? And I think, basically, a lot of people have slammed this down and just said, well, basically, they want to exterminate the majority of the population and have the rest live as not free-ish slaves like we are now, but total slaves, where everything is absolutely controlled. And this goes in, again, to explain the mentality of the elite, is that they're total control freaks. They can't handle people having freedom.
Oh, but if you look at the New World Order's agenda, what has leaked out in many different ways and areas, it's like, I would say it's the Fourth Reich. It's exactly what they tried to accomplish through Hitler. They didn't make it all the way there, but now they're doing it in a high-tech version. I mean, we're talking about the same power elite behind, the same financing, the same whole thing that was behind Hitler and both world wars and so on. Now they're trying again. They're really pushing forward. And what they try to accomplish is study history, and you will see it's Hitler's version. That you got an Aryan race, an elite race, and the rest of us are super controlled slaves, just like you said. And there are too many of us, so they want to get rid of a lot of us. Mm. And the rest of them, they want to control through all aspects of life, microchipped, one world army, one digital currency that they control totally and just super control. But I would say I am totally not into the end game thing. I am super optimistic about the future because I think we are at a time at the brink, like I said before, that everything is now shaking and they're getting really desperate. I think the elite are really shitting their pants and seeing that things are falling apart because there's such an awakening going on. That I think the future is going to be super. We just need to stay focused and stay strong and brave and just continue, laugh a lot and embrace each other, and we will sort this out in a beautiful way.
Three words, ladies and gentlemen. Stay the course. I had this philosophy a couple of years back, and I'm not too sure how much I believe in it now. I guess I still do to a degree, but it's that we've already won this fight. All right? We're just going through the motions here. The defeat of the New World Order agenda is at hand because it is being exposed. Okay? That was the only thing that the human race needed to start off. It is like a snowball. We've already pushed the snowball down the hill, and it's just getting bigger and bigger and bigger, and our victory is inevitable.
I totally agree. We're beyond the tipping point. It's done. These are the last. It's like the dragon is doing what you call the last cramp movements from the tail. It's trying to do like this, but it's dying. It's dying, and they know it. I do not envy members of the global elite because I think they are very, very afraid at the moment because they think that if it's exposed what they've been up to for such a long time, we will chop them up and serve them as pizza, no, spaghetti bolognese, and lynch them and so on. But if I have any say in this, this is absolutely not the way to go. The way it, if we do a revolution. Listen to the word revolution. If you study every single revolution in history, it has come out like the people that accomplished the revolution becomes even worse than the dictator that they knocked off his throne. A year or two down the line, they're even worse. So this is not a matter of revolution, it's a matter of evolution. We need to raise above this whole thing and raise above anger, hate, and violence. That is not the way to go. If we go the violent way, they will have the force. They will be and use that as an excuse to hit back 50 times stronger at us and use it to control us even more. That is not the way. The way to go is evolution. Raise the energy so that we transcend this situation by truth, with truth, and with these high energies like love and compassion, forgiveness. And standing side by side, just like Mahatma Gandhi said, just like Martin Luther King said, just like John Lennon, give peace a chance, make babies, not war, that type of thing, and take care of nature, start growing your own food, stop all this. There's so many different areas where we can control and start purifying life, start purifying and healing the planet and ourselves. And by doing that, we race to a level where they cannot reach us. So this is a super time to be alive.
What would you say to giving the elite amnesty? All right, the same way that the black South African movements gave the white South Africans amnesty. I heard this story that, and I think this is a similar case in Ireland as well with the British and the Irish, is that they said, look, you've treated us really badly for a really, really long time. And I know that you're probably afraid to give power back to the people who you've held power over for so long because you're afraid of reprisal. You might be afraid of vengeance that will pull you out of your plush mansions and hang you in the streets and so on and so forth. So what Nelson Mandela allegedly did, and correct me if I'm wrong, is he approached the power shifting on the basis of reconciliation rather than revenge. And I think that this would actually be a far better solution. If you approach the elite and just say, look, guys, you do realize you've kind of lost this battle, all right? You had this desire, and it just hasn't worked, okay? You've gotten away with it for a while, but now we're kind of going to overthrow you one way or the other. So here's the option. You can either, A, keep doing what you're doing and wind up getting some kind of violent, uncontrolled, maniacal population who will kill and torture you to death in order to get the power back, or you can stop doing what you're doing, give the power back to the people, retreat to your mansions, and live a life of luxury, the kind you've enjoyed the whole time, except you won't have any reins of power. Your choice. What would you say to a proposal like that?
I would say there would be an option three as well, not to return to all these mansions, but to return to normal mankind, you know, to a normal life, a normal thing. If you look at the Truth and Reconciliation Committee and what they did in South Africa, because there you had a country where a small elite group had committed incredible atrocities against the population. And like Nelson said, that the only way forward is for healing to appear, to take place, is for transparency. All of these dark secrets needs to be exposed. So he offered these people amnesty if they came totally clean. A very tricky situation. But I believe in that way, because we can only go forward. All of these horrific things that has happened, it's in the past. We are now at a situation where we need to move forward into a new future, and the only way to do that is by forgiveness and compassion. I would believe, because it doesn't, if we just brutally kill them, it won't solve it really, because we will still have all of this inside of us and so on. I can only say that I have a beautiful, beautiful Raja Yoga teacher. Raja Yoga, that's the yoga for the minds, the science of the mind and how to quiet it down. And she has a beautiful prayer that she often ends with, and it goes like this. May the entire universe be filled with peace and joy, love and light. May everyone, and especially the ones who hurt us, be filled with peace and joy, love and light. Victory to that light. Now, these words, I think, is a way forward, because it's only when these people that are so, how say I say, divulged, or I don't know this English word, but so in the dark, the only way for them to stop behaving the way they do is by filling this dark hole inside of them with love, or whatever it is that fills that hole. They cannot fill this hole up with greed or violence or all. They've tried that for centuries. It doesn't work.
The word you were looking for is devoid. Devoid of light, devoid of love. It means a lack of.
Yeah, this black hole that I'm sure, I feel very strongly that this is what, this is why they're craving so much riches and so on. It's never enough. I mean, look at it. What are they up to? I mean, like, one family owns more than half of everything in the world. It's ridiculous. I mean, how big mansions, how many cars can you get? How many whatever can you get? It's like so out of proportions. And it's because this immense black hole inside of them needs to be filled. And the only way they can fill it is by spirituality, I would say, and spiritual love and power inside. That's the way to heal it.
Yeah.
So it's a very difficult question how to move forward, but I am for that, because I think the main thing is to stop this madness, to stop the chemtrails, to stop the GMOs, to stop the whole thing, and just let the world heal itself back into balance. Because the world is an amazing place where there's all these building systems, like the immune system, the global immune system. There's an immune system there as well. If you stop bullying around with it and stop pumping it with poison, it will heal itself very quickly. So we just stop the madness. And then step two is how to do it, how to deal with these people that have been committed to it. Once again, I see them as teachers as well, because they're helping us to do this evolution. Without them, we wouldn't be in a situation that was forcing us to wake up like this.
Yeah.
But their actions is like, judge the sin, not the sinner. Their actions have been awful, awful, awful. So how to balance that and how to move forward? I would listen to people like Gandhi and Nelson Mandela, these people with great wisdom and knowledge, and how they dealt with it.
Yeah. Well, incidentally, Nelson Mandela was a member of the Knights of Malta, and Gandhi was quoted as saying blacks should be slaves. And what's interesting about this is that it doesn't mean that because one person is part of one bad organization that the entire person is bad and that everything they've ever done is bad. Does it? Okay? Again, throwing out the baby with the bathwater. How about this? How about the world is like a beach, and every grain of sand with on that beach, save a few, is a lie. All we got to do is find those grains of truth, collect them, and use them.
Sounds good to me. But once again, these quotes, I would just say that you just quoted saying that Gandhi said that the blacks should be used as slaves. Was that what you said?
Yeah, or something to that effect, yeah.
I would say I would be very careful with spreading these type of quotes, because who put them there in the first place? Yeah. If you see the actions of this individual called Mahatma Gandhi, that thing does not fit at all anywhere. So I would very much say it's very possible that things like that has been planted to
muddy the waters.
His exactly, because these agencies like the CIA and NSA and whatever in each and every country, I mean, they got massive budgets and they're not sitting picking their nose. They are attacking people that are standing up. They're discrediting people. They're taking care of people by violent means and so on. So just because you see that in a book or in a paper or something like that does not mean that it's true.
Yeah.
And just like with Nelson Mandela, I've heard a lot of things about him with question marks, saying who was he, or he was a member there, he was doing that. Okay, possible. I don't know. I have no idea. At the same time, look at the actions. What did this man do? What did he accomplish? And just don't just focus on one thing that you don't even know for sure is true.
Mm.
I have no idea about Nelson, but I know that what many of the things that he said and what he stood for, at least officially, was a beautiful way forward. So why not use that and maybe use that as a way forward for us as well?
Trees by their fruits.
Exactly.
You know, don't talk it's about like, what the person says or what somebody says about that person and what they said and whatever. Just have a look at the actions. What did they accomplish? What did they do? Did they accomplish copious quantities of scumbaggery and cover up a whole bunch of pedophile rings and wind up being implicated in a whole bunch of assassinations and cover-ups and so on and so forth? No, you don't have any evidence to prove that. Then they're probably not that bad, son.
And also, like, if you take me, for instance, I mean, I don't know what I appear to be like, but on my website, because I like the design and so on, I have half my face on it. That thing, and also that apparently I sit with my hand like this, with my cheek on my forehand, whatever. That apparently, according to some people, is a Freemasonry symbol. So because of that, they started this whole thing about me being a Freemason. Okay, fine.
With no evidence, you know.
But if that is what you want to think, okay, this could be spread that, okay, ole, 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 it's a Freemason and he's doing a hidden agenda.
Yeah.
Fine.
Yeah.
If that could be spread. I'm just saying, whatever the truth is, listen to whatever I say and see my actions, if they go hand in hand with Freemasonry or if they don't, and then make the judgment from that point. You know, so I can just say I'm not a Freemason, and I'm just because I have my hand like this or like this or like this, I don't know this symbolic language or whatever they mean. So let the actions and the word, and not just only the words, speak. Because if you let the words count, then somebody like Obama would be wonderful, absolutely wonderful. He says all the right things and all the, you know, to persuade us, great, but he doesn't do them at all.
Yeah. Oh, and, you know, this reminds me of, I had one of my listeners contact me on Skype. And do you know who Tila Tequila is?
The artist.
I guess she is, but she's doing a bit of a, she was the first Asian Playboy cover girl. And she came out. And she came out a few years ago, and she started exposing the Illuminati that were working in Hollywood and so on and so forth. And these are things that heaps of people have talked about. It's not news, but because she's Tila Tequila, Playboy model and what have you, coming out and saying it, it can actually wake up a lot of people. Now, what this person... you'll love this, and it's so in line with what you just told me. This guy contacted me. And he said, because Tila Tequila's website, Miss Tila Tequila, because Miss started with the letter M, and that M was pink, it means that she's been assassinated by a drone strike and is now being impersonated by an actor, because there's a pink M on her website. And he said, if you don't believe it, then you're retarded. I think it's actually the opposite way around, bro. It's because you believe it without any evidence corroborating it whatsoever means you're freaking retarded.
Oh, but it speaks for itself. I mean, what kind of logic is that? You know, a pink M, I wouldn't even be able to guess it if I knew about these things.
Yeah.
But it's the thing with the internet is it's a wonderful tool for freedom and liberty, but at the same time it's so bombarded as well. I mean, these secret services and NSA and CIA, and so, I mean, they're very aware of the power of the internet and trying to control it and also spread all this fake information as well. So it's very tricky sometimes to know what is true and what isn't, because very often they mix truth with lies. And just to make a total mess of the whole thing. So especially around these conspiracies, there's so much disinformation going around as well.
Yeah. And in fact, that's actually one of the other parts as well. I keep having to remind people of this. I mean, you come from the slave world. I call it, you know, where you believe everything that the government tells you, believe the mainstream media, you believe the cops are there to protect you and the judges are there to dispense justice. The child protection services are there to protect children and the food manufacturers like Monsanto are there to feed people healthy food. Okay. You figure out all that's a lie, and then you come into the truth movement, and you think that because you know all of that stuff is a lie, that you don't take all of those old habits of believing BS with you into the truth movement. You don't, okay? It's a long process. I mean, how long did it take you to get indoctrinated? High school, university, preschool, elementary, all of that kind of stuff all together? What did it take you? 20, 30 years of indoctrination? And you think because you've watched a couple of documentaries, suddenly you're not indoctrinated anymore and you're not under mind control? How do you know if you're under mind control? If you never question whether or not you're under mind control. I think that's about the size of it, isn't it?
Yeah, and also it's really important to find out about, just because it's a documentary doesn't mean that it's true, because these documentaries are also used very much to control the population. And you can often see when they're targeting a new country like North Korea or Iran or whatever, just before they want to do the attack, or Syria or whoever they're aiming for, there will be these documentaries that pops up once again with a problem reaction solution. Ooh, this country has such a bad leader, Gaddafi or someone like, he really needs, that is a major problem, to get the reaction from the population saying, well, it would be okay if you got rid of that guy, and in comes the solution, an invasion. These documentaries, they're some really good, and some of them are there to confuse us and to for their purposes.
Mm.
So once again, very important to keep an open mind when you see these things.
Yeah, I think one of the main problems that we have in this movement is psychological rigidity. All right, yeah, where you get psychologically invested in one particular worldview. Okay, you abandon your old worldview, and then another one gets inserted for you. I think it's kind of like somebody who's a priest at the Church of Satan, then renounces Satan, and then becomes a hardcore psychotic Christian extremist. Okay, all they're doing is providing you different catch nets on these different spectrums for you to jump onto. And the conspiracy movement's full of these kind of false dichotomies as well. You know, maybe this guy's an agent, or that guy's an agent, or something of that nature. Huh? And nobody seems to actually have much of a clue about who they are as people. And I think this is what allows them to be open for manipulation. If you're not familiar, if you're not confident and in and of yourself and your own spiritual awareness that you can't actually feel right from wrong, you're helpless. You're at the whim of whoever is feeding you this BS information, aren't you?
Yeah, and this is why I put such an effort into trying to disclose who they are. And like I said, I've taken the part mostly on the street level to be able to identify the different assassins used in many of these different operations, to be able to link them so that people will start seeing that there's a very clear pattern and come that they're actually connected. Also, that, I mean, they're active to this very day. So if you want to, we could go back to, I can just start describing a little bit about this team of assassins and how they've been involved in different operations.
Okay, we've only got a few minutes left, so if you want to wrap us up and round it off with that, I'd be much obliged.
Okay, if it's only a few minutes, I'll just do it very quickly. Like, the group I'm talking about was called Operation 40. It was started in the early 1960s or late 1950s, and it was under the surveillance of President Dwight Eisenhower. He gave the CIA chief, Alan Dulles, the task to, together with Richard Nixon, Vice President Richard Nixon, to form a team of assassins that could be used globally to take out whoever they had problems with. And this group was put together with mostly exiled Cubans, but also CIA operatives. And in this group, since we only got a few minutes, I won't go into the names. But many of the people.
By the way, you can take as much time as you want, and I'll just upload an extended little broadcast. But I know that you're short on time as well, so don't hold back on anything that you actually feel is relevant and important. And I'll give you as much time and as space as you need.
Okay, thanks, Vince. Okay, this group was put together, like I said, under the supervision of Richard Nixon, Vice President Richard Nixon. And the man put in charge to do the funding of funnel the funds from the military-industrial complex, from the mob, and from other groups was a man by the name of George Herbert Walker Bush. That's George Bush Sr. Now, George Bush Sr. was, his father was Prescott Bush, who was part of doing exactly the same, but doing the funding for Adolf Hitler, keeping the whole Nazi war machine going. Because this global elite wanted the Second World War to go, and keep going. Anyway, George Bush was involved with the funding of it, and his right hand that was given was a man by the name of Felix Rodriguez. Now, Felix Rodriguez was a high CIA operative as well, because they had tops from the CIA involved in this group, like Ted Shackley, the Blonde Ghost, David Attlee Phillips, and E. Howard Hunt, which was later one of the Watergate burglars. The whole Watergate burglary was done to cover up this group's involvement in this JFK assassination. So the people that was doing the burglary, all of them were part of the Operation 40. Now, when they started this, the main aim was to kill Fidel Castro. But then in the meantime, they did several attacks on Fidel Castro, but in the end, they failed. And in the meantime, JFK became a bigger threat. So what was done was that this cannon that they had created with, like there were between 40 and 86 members most of the time of these highly skilled assassins that was trained in guerrilla warfare and many other ways of assassinate people with bombs and poison and all of these things. While when they couldn't get to Fidel Castro, like I said, JFK became the current problem. So they just changed the cannon and aimed it at him instead. And in Dealey Plaza, the shooters that was there were sent. Most of them came from Operation 40, and then with a mob. Putting in their shooters as well. So if I can go quickly through in Dealey Plaza, who were the shooters? In the Daltex building, the shooter was a man by the name of Chucky Nicoletti. He was the hitman from the Chicago mob, and he was supplied by Chicago mob leader Sam Giancana, who was actually staying at the Adolphus Hotel in Dallas that day as well. The shooter was Chucky Nicoletti, and the spotter. They always have two or three people in the team. There's one shooter, one spotter. The spotter is sort of checking out the area. He's also checking out the escape routes and so on. And sometimes there's a breakdown guy as well who takes over the gun, who takes the shells, get rid of all kind of evidence that is in the location, and gets rid of it as soon as possible after the shooting. Anyway, in this case, the spotter, his name was Nestor Izquierdo. He was a member of Operation 40 as well. And in the same room, it was the office in the Daltex building where the shots came from, was a CIA front, a mining company. In that office that day was George Bush Sr., as well, the funding guy, and later the president of the United States. Were in that. Together, there was one more man called Johnny Rosselli. He was the liaison between the government, the CIA, and the Chicago mob, or the different mobsters, because it was not only the Chicago mob, it was also the Miami mob, some parts from New York, and the Louisiana, where you got Carlos Marcelo. Santos Traficante in Miami, Carlos Marcelo, and Sam Giancana were one of the main ones in this hit. Okay, so that was the Daltex building. When you go up to the school book depository, the Texas school book depository, where Lee Harvey Oswald was claimed to have been shooting from, the so-called sniper's nest, the actual shooter in that sniper's nest, his name was Eladio Del Valle. He was a member of Operation 40, a former secret informer for the Batista regime on Cuba. And the spotter in that window was a man by the name of Herminio Diaz Garcia, a black mercenary who was also part of Operation 40. Then on the western, the sixth book floor in the Texas School Book Depository is one made big room. And in the opposite end of the room, at that window, there was another shooter. His name was Richard Kane. He was a former Dallas police officer who later became a lieutenant for Sam Giancana in Chicago. And he did the shooting from there. Anyway, you had, as far as I've been able to find out, Lee Harvey Oswald was absolutely not involved with this. He had been duped into thinking that his task was to infiltrate the group that was doing the assassination. And so he was actually there, I must say, as a hero, because he knew what he was up against. Not that he was going down as a patsy, but that he was actually risking his life to stop this whole thing. But I think his task was, he was on the second floor on the school book depository, and he was observed by one of the first police officers that ran into the building. He was observed very calmly standing drinking a Coca-Cola bottle. meaning that he could not have gone from the sixth floor down to the second floor in only 40 seconds without being totally out of breath. There were also people walking in the staircase, and nobody saw him there. So I believe that the reason why he was there was he was blocking the elevator so that the shooters on the sixth floor would not be disturbed during the whole hit. And he was standing right where this where you buy the Coca-Cola bottles, right. That was exactly where the elevator shaft came down. So his task was to stop them, to anyone to go up and use the elevator. And at the same time, the shooter later, just after the shootings, managed to get down inside the elevator shafts on ropes, since they were guerrilla trained fighters. That was the way they got out without anyone seeing them. Then when you go to towards the grassy knoll where the limo, the whole motorcade was slowed down by making, they made a change to the route going into a route that totally broke all security rules, because it was first a very sharp 90-degree turn into Houston Street and then a 120-degree turn onto Elm Street. And if you look at Dealey Plaza from above, for one thing, there's an obelisk. And for another thing is that it's an absolute pyramid shape where the hit was done almost at the top of the pyramid. Coincidence? I don't know. I'm just pointing it out. And also, so when we go further down the grassy knoll, there was in the grass, there's one guy standing with an umbrella, a black umbrella, and it's been speculated that inside this umbrella there was some poison darts or something like that. In my opinion, absolutely not. His task was to show the exact spots for the crossfire, because they had so many different shooters and everyone was supposed to shoot at the same time. Otherwise, it couldn't be blamed on one single patsy. If there were like 20 shots fired, you could never blame it on one guy. So he was the one. His task was to just show where the shot should be fired. His name was Roy Hargraves. He was very closely associated to Operation 40. And the person in front of him, there's a guy standing waving right when the limo passes, a dark Cuban man. As far as I and many other researchers have been able to identify, his name was Felipe Vidal Santiago, very closely connected to the Operation 40 as well. And this guy was later working under the name, the false identity of Charles Morgan. He was working for a CIA front company called ITT. And this was in 1963. But 1985, just a few months before the hit on the Swedish Prime Minister, he was in Stockholm trying to recruit assassins for that hit. And his job over the years had been to go to different countries and recruit assassins for different jobs. So here you can see there's one direct link between these two assassinations. Okay, on the street corner as well, on Dealey Plaza, when you go into towards Elm Street, one of the guys that you can see there, if you enlarge the photos, was a CIA operative, very high up, called David Morales. Now, this David Morales, he was part in this hit on JFK. He was also at the Ambassador Hotel when Robert Kennedy was killed, where he was there with two other very, very high CIA operatives, not doing the shootings, but being part of taking care of the whole operation. And he was also the one who later was sent to Bolivia together with Felix Rodriguez, the guy who helped George Bush with the funding of Operation 40. These two people were sent to Bolivia to try and track down Che Guevara, who is an accomplice or a partner of Che Guevara. And it was actually Felix Rodriguez who led a small patrol of military people. They tracked Che Guevara down, and the guy that was ordered to execute him was David Morales. Anyway, we go back to Dealey Plaza. And on the opposite side of the street, when you look at the Zapruder film, once the first shots are fired, look up in the right corner. There's very few few people that have noticed this guy. It's a guy in light clothes with a big, dark brown bulletproof vest. Very obvious once you see him, but you're so focused on the limo that no one looks at him. And this guy is a man by the name of Walter Tobinski. He was the guy, one of the guys I mentioned before, who's one of the worst serial killers in modern time. And as far as I know, I'm not sure if he's still alive, but he and his partner, Clyde Forshaw, have been very, very active to this very day. Anyway, he's also the guy who's been, they took photos of being an imposter of Lee Harvey Oswald. But when he came out from the Cuban and Russian embassy in Mexico City earlier on, there are clear photos of him. But this guy, if you look at him at the Zapruder film, you will see that he, just when the limo passes, he takes like a tactical stance and he's got some kind of weapon firing something at the president. And according to himself, to one, what one witness have told me, is that Walt Sabinski himself told that his task was to fire a tranquilizer, some kind of tranquilizer at the president to make him not be able to move so that the other people could finish the job with triangular fire. I don't know if that is true or not, but when you look at the Zapruder film, it makes a whole lot of sense because his technical stance, he fires and then he lets his hand drops down to the sides. And in photos taken just a few minutes after the whole motorcade has passed, you can see this Walter Tobinski walk very slowly, very relaxed towards the school, Texas School Book Depository. Okay, so then we go down down towards the grassy knoll. And if you, there's like a wall, concrete white wall, and there's where the so-called badge man can be found. The badge man, or black dog, he's also called, is a man in a, it's been identified as a, he has a black Dallas police uniform on. And there's one photo where you can actually see where he fires right at the limo. Next to him, there's a railroad worker standing who took care of it. Once the shots were fired, he ran over to one of the bystanders who had been filming it, grabbed the film from this guy, then ran behind the picket fence, threw the rifle to the guy in the railroad clothes, who then he went behind sort of like an electric cupboard or whatever you want to call it, and bent down and took apart the guns very quickly, boom, boom, and put it into a toolbox and then started walking slowly towards the railroad tracks where he went into, I don't know where he disappeared there from there on. But anyway, that police officer, or fake police officer, the so-called badge man, as far as I've been able to identify, his name was Lucien Sarti. He was an international hitman, very, very bold, very careless, which made him feared by many, but also made him one of the best people because he didn't. He was so unafraid of dangers. He was supplied by, through Santos Traficante from Miami. He was the guy who got the Marseille mob to import this guy. They flew them to, he and two accomplices, to Mexico City. They then went up to Brownsville in Texas, crossed the border there, were picked up by a member of the Chicago mob and driven to Dallas some weeks before. Anyway, we go, they're also next to them, to the right of these two people, that if you see that they reversed a car in, it's a white Oldsmobile, I think, and next to there's a shooter as well. You can see him in the Orville next film very clearly if you know where to look for him. This guy, as far as I've been able to identify, is the person I spoke about before, Clyde Forshaw. Anyway, we go towards the picket fence, and on, behind the picket fence is the guy that actually fired the final headshot. His name was James Files. He's still alive. He's in prison in Illinois. And he has come forward, not very easily. It's taken years for him to persuade him to come forward. But he did the final headshot. He was the driver for Chucky Nicoletti from, if you remember him, in the Daltix building. And he was only there to go there and supply the weapons and drive the escape car out of Dallas that day. But in just an hour or so before the assassination, there was the whole operation was supposed to be called off by some parts of the CIA. So Johnny Roselli, who was the liaison, he got cold feet and said, I'm not going to do the shooting, I back off. So then Chucky Nicoletti asked his driver, who had a very violent background, very skilled killer, if he would do him the honor of taking part of that. So he was fine with that and positioned himself behind the picket fence. There's a tree there. He was standing right to the right of it, if you look from down from where the limo was. And the weapon he used was an XP-100 Remington Fireball. It was like a rifle pistol. It's a rifle, but made with a pistol grip and a short barrel. Very, very efficient weapon on a short distance, very accurate. And this was given to him by Ted Shackley from Operation 40 as well. Now, David Attlee Phillips from Operation 40. Now, this David Attlee Phillips is very, very interesting because he was the CIA handler of no one less than Lee Harvey Oswald. He was also the controller and handler of James Files. And he was also the controller of a serial killer by the name of Michael Vernon Townley, who was later very integrated in a lot of different terror acts committed by Operation 40 and so on, and also was on location when the Swedish Prime Minister Olof Palme was killed in February 1986. Yet another connection. It just goes on and on, but this is the general overview of what happened in Dealey Plaza this day. But it was so much bigger than that, because the whole way of how there was absolutely no protection of the Prime Minister, the limo was positioned right up in the front instead of in the middle of the motor cage. His private physician was placed at the very back of the motor cage. The press car that was normally positioned in front of the presidential limo to take photos, that was placed behind it, way back behind it, and so on. And the whole protection thing with military protection and so, which normally takes place like a month ahead, you know, when Secret Service goes to a new town and just checks out all the dangers and takes care of all of that. Nothing of all that was done. It just goes on and on and on. So, I can only say that many of these members in Operation 40 was later totally central in the whole Operation Contras Iran scandal, together with Oliver North and so on. They were also very central in what was called Operation Condor, which was tracking down Allende supporters. They were part of doing the overtake of Salvador Allende, and also later tracking down his supporters globally and doing killings there. They were also part of blowing up Orlando Letier at Embassy Row in Washington, D.C., which was a major, major terror act on American soil. And the parts of Operation 40 was later, like the one guy called Porter Goss, he was later the chief of the CIA under George Bush Jr. And he was also involved, quite a few of them are involved in the 9/11 attack as well. And it just goes on and on. So this Operation 40 has been called the grandmother of all operations. And it's been so central, even though it's changed names many times. It's gone under many different names of Pegasus and G2 and I don't know all the different names. But in fact, it's the same group of assassins that have been used and are still being used. Now they're training new ones. There are new generations coming up and so on. But many of them are still alive. And that was about it.
All right. Well, Ollie, it's been a pleasure and an honour and various other nice adjectives, mate. I actually really appreciate all your research that you want to lay down here, and also your humility to admit that you don't know everything, which is actually quite rare for very credible researchers, and I want to thank you for that. Fantastic.
You're welcome. Can I also say I'm looking to make a documentary, a top quality documentary about Operation 40, because it connects so many of these major terror acts that have been committed the last 50, 60 years. And so I'm really looking to try and get in touch with John Pilger or people on his caliber, documentary maker. I'm also, if people would like to help me, just like you, with donations or signing up for my newsletter or so on, it's extremely appreciated. If you don't know what to do, how you can help, support people like Vinny and myself, because without, it's very, very hard to feed your family at the same time as doing this type of research. So any type of support like that is extremely appreciated.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you're hungry for the truth, I can assure you, you'll wind up going hungry because you can't afford the food, because nobody pays you very much for telling the truth. They do pay you a hell of a lot of money if you tell bullshit and kill people, on the other hand. I guess we're in the wrong business. All right. Thank you, Ollie. And ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for all your continued support and whatnot. And as I mentioned before, we've got like a $900 shortfall this week. So if you are capable of donating a significant chunk of change just to keep me on the air, you know, it's actually this close to the wire, ladies and gentlemen. I can't stress it enough. Wait, let's see. I think I just did with the tone of voice. Please help me. Please, you know, what do I have to do? Get down on my knees? Well, I'm already sitting down, bro. Okay, well, thank you very much, Ollie. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for listening, and we'll see you again sometime, assuredly.
My absolute pleasure. You take care.
Cheers, man.